Welcome to today's episode of Relationship Alive. This is your host, Neil Satin. My philosophy is that relationships not only can be a vehicle for your own healing, but that it's actually required to do your work to heal from whatever is keeping you from fully showing up in your life, in your relationships, and in the bedroom. And just like we touched on in our conversation with Diana Richardson way back in episode 2, there is tremendous potential for you when you're in relationship to help your partner on that journey of healing, especially sexual healing. I'm bringing this up because on today's show, our guest is Wendy Maltz, author of The Sexual Healing Journey. Her book is about how to recover from sexual trauma and deepen your capacity for intimacy and sexual pleasure. In this episode, we're talking about how you can take on that legacy of pain and potential disconnect and use it to build a more solid, loving, sensual, and yes, sexual connection with your partner. There are all kinds of things that could have an impact on your sexual development, cause some degree of trauma, and be an obstacle to true intimacy with your partner. So, even if you haven't been specifically affected by some form of assault or abuse, this conversation is for you to find opportunities for your own sexual growth and healing. If you have been affected by some form of sexual trauma, this conversation could potentially be a trigger for you. My goal through having Wendy on the program is to help you and your partner get through the triggers together to a place where you can have deep intimacy, connection, and the kind of fulfilling sex life that is your birthright. A few last things I want to mention. I do bring up an episode with Gary Wilson of Your Brain on Porn, which hasn't been released yet, though it's coming soon. Also, Wendy's Relearning Touch and Sexual Healing videos are now available for free on her website, healthysex.com. And as always, you'll have a chance to win a free signed copy of Wendy's book. All this and more on today's episode. Wendy Maltz, thank you so much for being here on Relationship Alive.
Well, thank you for having me, Neil.
It's truly my pleasure. As we were discussing before the interview, I feel like this situation particularly in America, but I'm sure that it's worldwide, of how issues of rape, abuse, incest can affect both men and women directly and then indirectly in terms of their relationships. The problem is so widespread. I'm wondering if you can give our listeners a sense of what the current known statistics are around these kinds of issues.
Well, the statistics vary depending on what types of sexual abuse occurred and what's being recorded. But in general, it seems like one in three females are sexually abused in their lifetime, and somewhere between about one in five to seven males.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty high. And then when you figure in a lot of things of being spoken at inappropriately or touched inappropriately, you know, in a subway car or whatever, you know, there's a lot there. So I think that a lot of females in particular run into experiences of some type of affront to their sexuality in their lifetime. It's a pretty common thing. We see it a lot in our media. And there are a lot of males too, especially male children, but they don't talk about it as much. There's a little bit more discussion happening now than there was 20, 30 years ago when I started, you know, counseling people, but still that's kept under wraps a bit more.
It also occurred to me as I was rereading your book, The Sexual Healing Journey, that even just exposure to sexual imagery or sexual words can really have an effect on a young child. And you might not necessarily classify that or think back on that as abuse necessarily, but even those things can really have an impact on how people develop in terms of their sexual awareness and identities.
Right. I think we all have an a right to have our sexuality unfold at a time and in a way that fits with our level of maturity, and where sex is something that we're kind of curious about and excited about and feel we can be in control of. And a lot of children are being denied that right in our culture. And when you factor in pornography, the access to pornography that children have nowadays, and types of pornography that are quite extreme too, you can almost look at that as a form of kind of cultural a sexual abuse type activity, where I define sexual abuse as when you're dominated or exploited by sexual activity or suggestion. It's an affront to your sexuality. It's harm done to your sexuality. Someone approaches your sexuality or interferes with your sexual development using sexual energy. It's often the attack is to a person's genitals, awakening them prematurely and in a context where there is domination and exploitation going on. So, that's pretty broad definition. And I think a lot of us, all have experienced that in one way or another quite repeatedly in our culture.
How would you contrast that with a healthy exploration of sex and maybe even a healthy exploration of power dynamics that can come up when people are being sexual with each other?
Well, I think there can be sort of like being introduced to some activities, kissing on the playground, let's say, or where you do some, you see somebody in a classroom, if you're an adolescent, and you've noticed your body get turned on, you spin off into a sexual fantasy, doing some exploration with self-touch or touch with another person, and feeling, like I said, it has to do with when you're feeling curious, ready, in control of what's happening, which means you feel you can stop it at any time. And when there isn't an actual overt exploitation going on or domination going on. So it's that ability to control the situation and also be educated enough and aware enough, mature enough, to know what some of the consequences could be of different choices, sexual choices, choices to whether to explore making out, let's say, or to, pass.
Right.
Pass on it for now, yeah.
So getting back to the question of the impact of sexual abuse in all its various forms on relationships. You mentioned pornography, and we had a great conversation the other day with Gary Wilson of Your Brain on Porn about the impact of watching porn on men and women and libido and developing intimacy. And I mentioned this to you offline that it suddenly occurred to me, oh, this is like the other side of the coin for it's kind of the dark issue of men primarily in relationships. And when you talk about one out of three women having gone through some form of sexual abuse or assault, suddenly you realize like, oh, well, this is almost like the corresponding thing that lots and lots of women and certainly some men as well are going through. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, pornography has been called by feminists manual for rape. I think that's kind of extreme, but it does show people being used as objects, women in particular and children. And it shows sex as a form of power often. There's a lack of intimacy. And becoming involved with pornography, especially today's high-speed internet porn and where it's on demand, it's right there, can often be the first sexual experience that a youth, either male or female, has, where they feel their sexual energy awakened, or they have their first, are having their first orgasms to with self-stimulation to pornographic images. It kind of gets in there with some early conditioning that doesn't match up real well with then learning skills that help with developing self-control, intimacy, and having a rich, sensual-based sexuality, pleasure-based sexuality unfold, where you're really in the moment. You're not like dissociated into a fantasy of an image, but you're really in your body, in your breath, in your movement, in your feelings for, if you're with a partner, for the partner, or even just your feelings about nature and your own marvelous body. You know, if you're with yourself, it gets in there early. Pornography gets in there early and starts creating these associations, like where you get dependent on this product. And it's kind of like fast food or junk food or whatever. You don't learn to really enjoy really good cooking, home cooking, or marvelous desserts and meals that are rich and nurturing and nourishing. So yeah, it's kind of sad what's going on. I don't think we're even as a society all that conscious of what's happening to this whole generation. But it can potentiate sexual abuse, because sexual abuse is often shown without any consequences. I've heard umpteen stories as a therapist of victims of sexual abuse saying that their perpetrators got the ideas for what they were doing, like an older brother got the idea to sexually abuse them from exposure to pornography, or people turning to sexual abuse because they saw types of abusive children. One fifth of all pornography on the internet is child sexual abuse. It's pretty high.
Wow.
And so people see those images, even if they, you know, or they get those ideas, and even if they have like over 18-year-olds dressed up as children or whatever, or watching cartoon porn that involves children, it lays some associations. It sort of says, I really hate the term kiddie porn. It's like, what? You know, this is not playground stuff. This is, anytime there's an image of a child being sexually in child pornography, that is child abuse pornography. That is a crime scene that you're watching. And people can get very confused, because sometimes they can get aroused to it and then wonder, worry that they're a pedophile or will be, or just feeling lots of shame and guilt. So there's a lot of negative repercussions going on, but people aren't sitting around talking about it like, you know, a young male, let's say, who's 12 or 13 years old, he's not like going to his parents and saying, I saw this thing on the internet and it freaked me out and then I got excited by it sexually. What does this mean? So a lot of the negative repercussions from sexual abuse for victims of all kinds get really occur because they're done, because the victim is left in isolation without support, without guidance, without somebody saying, oh, this is what you experienced, this is why that stuff exists, and your reactions were normal given the circumstances of the way you were being traumatized by what you were seeing or being exposed to, or by the person who was touching you. So, you know, people need a lot of young, when you're a victim of sexual abuse, you need a lot of support. And that's what a lot of what recovery is, even though it might be delayed 15 or 10 years from the time of the actual assault. You know, it's people getting comfort, getting reassurance, getting information that can help them to understand what they experience and be able to talk about it, to grieve over losses, and to then develop and learn new skills that can help them to move beyond the trauma. Sexual abuse is not a type of trauma that, you know, heals itself over time in isolation.
So what are some common problems that people might experience in a relationship that you might be able to trace back to one of the people, or both for that matter, but at least one person having been a victim?
Well, you can have fear of sex or withdrawal from sex, approaching sex as an obligation, having automatic reactions come up to touch, like disgust or guilt or shame, having sexual functioning problems, the whole gamut there, from premature ejaculation to erectile difficulty, impotence, if you will, and low sex desire, painful intercourse for females, and difficulties with having an orgasm. So you can have, you know, specific sexual dysfunctions that can be traced to reactions and repercussions of abuse. You have intrusive sexual fantasies, and, you know, not feeling present during sex, feeling dissociated, and it's, you know, there's a lot of different ways it can go with different types of repercussions. Knowing the repercussions can help a person say, oh my gosh, I'm not going crazy, or I'm not unsexual. I'm not, you know, like my nature isn't asexual. It's that, oh my goodness, I experience something and I'm having what are normal, understandable reactions to the sexual assault I experience. But one of the things there, a person has to see what they experienced as having been abuse or assault. I'm a good example of that myself. When I was in college, I went out with a guy who was a law student, and we drank, and he ended up taking me back to his apartment and assaulting me. And at the time, I thought, oh, you know, I shouldn't have drunk. What was wrong with me? I was scared, very scared during it. It had a violent nature to it. But my thoughts were just to get out of there. And it wasn't until I actually, you know, kind of became a counselor, was looking at things, looking at my early experiences differently, than I went, and writing these books on sexual healing, that I went, oh, my God. What I experienced was a date rape, you know? And so we often don't label our experiences because we feel so much shame about them, or they seem normal or whatever, you know, to the society, the culture we're part of. But then to go, oh, okay, so that's why that type of touch terrifies me, you know, and you make a connection and you go, huh, okay, now I understand, or that's why I have these unwanted fantasies about this, because I'm trying to figure out still what happened to me, or it's a repercussion from this early abuse. That's why I think it is good on some level to look at premature exposure to pornography, or certain types of pornography, or a lot of exposure to pornography, like a lot of kids are having now, can be seen as behaving in ways such as traumatizing children.
Right. And I just want to mention too, you know, one of the reasons that this conversation was so important to me personally is that I've experienced what it's like to be with a partner who is a survivor from abuse. And so it's had a huge impact on me personally. And through reading your book and really exploring how it had impacted me and getting more of a sense of how that experience could have impacted her, it really opened up my eyes to a totally new way of experiencing the patterns that had come up in our sexuality. Because it's pretty easy, I think, to look at something like, well, my partner doesn't seem interested in sex. And suddenly you're like, you have a sexual problem where you're talking to a sex therapist about, well, how do we get more passion in our relationship? And you might be totally overlooking the obvious, like, oh, when I initiate sex, my partner gets triggered and dissociates. And so, of course, there's like,
right.
No sex happening. So how would someone... Is there a way that someone could definitively know this is an issue that I should really be looking at for myself, whether you're a survivor or the partner of that person?
Well, I think it's good if both people become very educated about sexual abuse and its repercussions to be able to identify if, the possibilities of different responses being related to unresolved issues that correspond with the early sexual abuse. I really feel my heart goes out to partners of survivors because they often are in the dark with what's going on and take it personally, can feel inadequate, and just the isolation they feel and the lack of love and feeling love but not having it, feeling physical love and not having it reciprocated in a relationship. And they all, often intimate partners make some big boo-boos and mistakes in terms of what they think they'll, go out and buy a dildo or whatever for their partner, thinking, oh, this is going to excite her because they saw it, in an advertisement on the internet or something. It's like, whoa, that's like could really re-trigger, And maybe there was a positive intention or getting some lingerie, sexy lingerie, but it makes the survivor feel like a sex object or like having to perform, which might have been some feelings that were related in the experience in the early abuse. Just by the very nature of wanting to be sexual, you can get an unconscious association to the perpetrator that is it's really can wreak havoc in what goes on physically. So this becoming aware, becoming conscious, talking about it together, learning to shift, and rather than be sort of adversarial with each other, and to see like, okay, we're going to become a team and we're going to approach this together. We're going to both learn all we can. We're going to learn new approaches to touch, new approaches to initiating intimacy. We're going to work together to create safety and go slowly. At times, you have to kind of go slowly, and the survivor's got to learn through things like the relearning touch exercises to be able that he or she has control of what's going on with their body and that they can communicate and be present and breathe and feel and nothing bad happens. And so there's just a lot to work together on. So you have to stop doing the behaviors that are getting in the way, demanding sex or, blaming the victim, things like this, and then shift to, oh, we're going to tackle this together. My husband and I call myself a patchwork survivor because I experienced a number of forms of sexual abuse. But, you know, when I was writing the sexual healing journey and describing the relearning touch exercises, and there was this one very simple, very basic one called hand clapping, and you sit facing each other like cross-legged, and the survivor makes up a hand clapping routine and teaches it to the partner. And you think, oh, what is this? This is so ridiculous. This is playground activity. What does a couple need to do that? But the reality is you're working on things like being able to breathe comfortably, being able to communicate and be present and relax and have fun. And my husband, Larry, who's this just wonderful guy, we've been married for, together nearly 40 years, believe it or not.
Great.
And he's very athletic and he has these large arms, and he put his arms up to begin for the hand clapping routine. And I immediately dissociated into being like going back in age, I was like this sort of kid. And I said, cause he's taller than I am and bigger and his arms were big and all. And I mean, this is Larry. He's my buddy. He's my lover. He's my friend, and it just really blew me away that one of the very simplest relearning touch experience, me, this author and sex therapist or whatever, I like I was dissociating in. And it was because I was really trying to be present, and not dissociate. I was trying to really be there with him. And then I got in touch with the reactions. So he said, rather than go him getting upset with me and go, Wendy, it's just me, or, can't you relax, or, I'm not going to hurt you or anything like that. He just kind of went, well, is there anything you can think of that you need that would help you to feel older, to not go back in years and feel like a kid again or whatever? Is there anything that you can think of that we could do differently that might help you feel better? So I thought, and then he said, well, what about if you sat on a pillow or a cushion, which I did. And we got so many cushions, I started to topple over. And then I felt kind of out of control. I said, no, that doesn't work. But we got to a point where I was about eye level with him and we could do it. And I didn't dissociate and I enjoyed it. And it was me and it was him. And I learned a lot from that experience. Just how much you have to really slow down to and relearn and work together as a team. Both people, nobody taking it personally or anger or blame, but just more, okay, we've both been impacted by this and we're gonna overcome it together.
I want our listeners to know that my intent while we're talking is to really keep focusing on both people in the relationship, that because I love that there's an acknowledgement of what the partner of a survivor is going through and how challenging that can be, whether it's to recognize that your partner has associated you with someone who was the original offender or perpetrator, or simply feeling your partner vanish, or like they're not there. Either they're not there because they're not having sex with you, or maybe they feel like they're not there because they're just like having sex with you compulsively. Whatever it is, where you feel like they're not really fully present there and loving you. And it can really be a challenge in those moments to not take it personally, as you just mentioned, to not feel like, you're either not desirable or there's something wrong with you and that's why you're not being met fully. Do you have any tips for partners and who are dealing with those very issues around their own feelings of not really being met and how they can really show up and get past that kind of feeling?
Well, I think if you think in terms of doing the opposite of what a perpetrator might do, like a perpetrators, they don't ask, they don't make a request, they don't check in. with how the other person's doing. They don't allow choice. They're very self-centered and very either angry or quiet, or and so if you're thinking, I'm going to approach sex in an opposite way than a perpetrator. And that doesn't mean that you really think you're in any way a perpetrator. It just says it means that you're knowledgeable enough to know that there can be these unconscious associations that go on. Like, I remember once working with a couple where they're working towards being able to be intimate again after not having intimacy. The woman had been sexually abused by her father and a number of other males growing up. And the husband was feeling really sexually frustrated, understandably, and longing and wanting connection with her. And he found his wife very attractive. He went into the bathroom one morning, and when she was coming out of the shower, and he looked at her when she, drew the curtain aside, and he was looking at her with, like, "God, you're gorgeous, you're really hot, Mm-hmm. And it just set her off in terms of her anger, her, you just think of me as a sex object, blah, blah, blah. And they totally missed each other in that experience. So he learned, that the experience was discussed a lot, and he learned that why she had the reaction she did, and she also learned about his reaction and where he was coming from in it. And they had to do a lot of talking and then figuring out, okay, let's replay that. How could that be replayed in a way that has a positive ending? You know what I mean? Or where goes somewhere positive. And so, those experiences, as upsetting as they are, can be great stepping stones for learning. And nobody's the bad guy. Nobody's to blame. You, like I said, you shift from being in more kind of adversarial stance to having compassion and understanding and, for each other's position. The survivor doesn't want to, ignore his or her feelings and do something that feels uncomfortable. And the partner shouldn't go to a place where they feel like they're putting down their natural and healthy sexual urges and feelings, and having those, allow those to be condemned as something bad when they're not.
What kind of hope can you offer a partner who may be feeling like, wow, I wonder if I'm ever going to be able to experience myself and my sexuality freely with my survivor partner?
Yeah, I think when you do, stop behavior that in any way has triggered negative feelings associated with the abuse, you learn to work it as a team. You develop skills together, like the ability to check in with each other, to stop and change a behavior, to be more comfortable when you're able to emotionally process feelings together that might come up, grief feelings or just feelings of being overwhelmed or overexcited that might come up too. With that, all those skills you develop do in the long run pay off. That once a survivor has learned new skills and you as a couple have learned new skills to handle all different kinds of situations together, you're then, you then have what you need to handle things in the future, and you're likely to have positive experiences. And if you make sex something that is safe and fun, where you're exploring your curiosity together, and I think it has to do with, comes down to love. It just comes down to love as being stronger than sexual abuse. when there's something about real love and real caring and real connection that is very, very healing. And when survivors experience that, and they experience the beauty of feeling a sexual arousal that's like related to love and within their control, and it then, you know, creating, it's like a new file opens up. The old files, like manila folder files, you know, close down, you know, or and you open this new file and you have these experiences that are positive, and then they can be built on. And, you know, you brought up something a little earlier, Neil. I often, when I'm talking about repercussions from sexual abuse, will talk about the fear of sex and avoiding sex and withdrawal from sex. But this compulsively wanting to engage in it or needing to engage in it or compulsive masturbation or, you know, a lot of sexual addiction / compulsive kind of behavior can also be a repercussion from sexual abuse that gets in the way of intimacy, and that a couple, you know, needs to learn to understand and work to address together. Yeah,
one thing that made a huge impact on me, it was with a conversation that we had with Marnia Robinson of Cupid, who wrote Cupid's Poisoned Arrow, about how you can actually do this style of sex called carezza, or some people call it slow sex, that's all about fostering intimacy and fostering the bonding hormones that you release with your partner. And it occurred to me, in the context of healing from sexual trauma, that especially because in your book I was reading the distinction that you were making between sex and intimacy, and how amazing it can be for partners who think that they, what they want is sex with their mm-hmm. partner, to actually mm-hmm. discover, oh, what I really wanted was this profound connected intimacy that you can be experiencing before you're even having sex necessarily.
Yeah. Where your touch is really wanted and really enjoyed, and where you, through your touch, can create pleasure in your partner that your partner appreciates. Those basic things. It's not just about orgasm. I mean, orgasm is marvelous, you know, and what a spectacular sneeze we're all capable of that is relaxing and, you know, can put us in touch with starbursts and sunrises and everything. It just feels good. But that's not, it's just, you know, that really, in terms of what is deeply, what often like feeds a relationship over time, are more of these experiences of like, where sex is more like dancing together in a fun way, or going on a journey together of different sensual treats. And you are making a meal together and, you know, cooking together. It's more this sort of sensual sharing where you're present with each other in the moment and you're having an impact and effect on each other and feel special to your partner. Wow, you know. And,
right,
you know, if what you're doing could have been done by a sex toy, you don't walk away from it feeling like you were really related to, you know.
Right. I definitely want to talk some more about the relearning touch exercises. Before we do, however, I'd like to go back just a minute and talk about those moments of being triggered from the perspective of the survivor, and really giving our listeners a chance to figure out, okay, I see this is going on for me, or yeah, I'm getting triggered in bed with my partner and I don't want to. You know, I've heard it described as like my head and my heart want you, but my body just cringes and doesn't, you know, can't participate. So how does a survivor who's in this place, what can they do when they are feeling triggered and you know, particularly in those moments that are sexual, and they know, you know, my partner wants me, I want to show up for them, but I can't, you know, I'm elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the important things is don't go through it alone, you know. And even if somebody gets triggered when they're self-pleasuring, they need to stop and acknowledge what's happening. So to stop and become aware you're having a reaction, speak about it, calm yourself, put your hand over your heart even, that can help become aware of the present moment and how it's different from the past and who you are in the present, how old you are, and the feelings that are going on with it, the relationship you have, the safety you have now. Be able to try and figure out what specific thing might have caused the reaction and then alter in some way. You can either take a break, go get up, get a cup of tea, go to the bathroom, whatever, or just hug each other and kind of hold each other for a while and then reapproach in a different way. You know, so it's like it's that acknowledging and then calming and reapproaching can be really helpful. And I discuss that there's a whole chapter on dealing with automatic reactions to touch in the sexual healing journey, and with lots of examples. And there's even a big questionnaire there where that helps you to identify things that might be triggers that might come up, so you can be a little bit more conscious about what's happening. But if you have a really strange reaction and you're just going, well, I shouldn't have had this reaction, why did I have this reaction? It's like, do not condemn yourself or get upset with yourself. Just acknowledge it, feel compassion for yourself. It's more like an attitude like, for whatever reason, I got triggered.
Right.
You know, you took your thumb and you slowly stroked my cheek. What a sweet gesture. But I got it. Somehow that triggered me. You know, it's like you don't get upset like, what's wrong with me? I can't even do that. But it's more like, okay, now what is it about that? How can we redo it? And how can I direct a partner to do that? Or maybe we just need to avoid that for a while. Or maybe I need to ask my partner, what were you thinking when you were stroking my cheek with your thumb? What was going through your head? You know, and I need to kind of connect with, this is my partner, and this is how, you know, what he or she, who's he or she is, and that's different than stuff from the past. So, yeah.
Yeah, from my perspective, I can say as a partner, it's been amazing to have my partner stop and actually say, I'm not here right now. And you know, before that was something that was easy to do, it was, I would wonder where did she go? And what's even going on right now? And those were frequently moments that I would take that personally. And so to actually be able to have dialogue about that, and not only that, but as a partner, it's so empowering to also be able to stop and check in and say, are you here right now? What's going on? You know, and maybe the response you'll get is, oh yeah, I'm here. This is great. Love it. Or, you know, maybe you'll get the response of, yeah, I'm not here. And thank you so much for showing me that you care, that I'm actually a person here.
Yeah. Or I'm going in and out and I'm having a little trouble, but most of the time I'm enjoying it. You know,
yeah.
Those kind of things. And when you're, when partners are able to hear that, if their partner stops, then if the survivor stops, says, I'm having a reaction. If the intimate partner can respond to it in a way of, thank you for telling me, you know,
yeah,
what would be helpful to you right now? You know, it's sort of like, help me be able to be, to help you. You've got to make things like safety and communication and feeling emotionally true, honest, and close with each other, those things need to take precedence over the hot and heavy excitement that might be going on or your desire to have an orgasm.
Right.
And when you make it have be more important in the long run, you'll have better sex. You might have several frustrating experiences where you're, you know, essentially teaching your partner, who is the survivor, that he or she matters more to you than your own getting off or whatever, you know.
Right.
But once you've done that and you've taught them that and they get it and you feel it and it's true and a part of who you are, then the safety's established. You're no longer going to be unconsciously associated with the perpetrator. And then that allows the survivor to open up to the sexual experience in a new way, being able to receive and give and receive pleasure, you know, at new levels.
Yeah, and your exercises, which I'd like to talk about in just a moment in the book around relearning touch, seem like they're a great way of really getting from the most safe possible kinds of touch and interaction to places that are truly sensual and yet still safe, and, you know, always coming back to that context of safety and trust that you're building with your partner. Before we talk about that, I just want to mention to our listeners that Wendy Maltz has generously offered to do a giveaway of a signed copy of her book, The Sexual Healing Journey. If you are interested in qualifying for the giveaway, you can do a couple things. The first is you can text the word passion, P-A-S-S-I-O-N, to the number 33444 and just follow the instructions there, which will qualify you. Or I'm going to put a little resource guide together for this episode, which is available at neilsatin.com/Wendy, W-E-N-D-Y. And if you go there, you'll be able to see the show notes for today's episode, a summary of all the salient points that we discussed, and be able to download that resource guide. And when you download that, that will qualify you for the giveaway. So the resource guide is going to be there forever. If you hear this episode within the next week that this episode has aired, then you will be able to actually qualify for that giveaway. So thank you so much, Wendy, for that generous offer. Really appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome. Hope they like it.
It's such a fabulous book in how easy it makes it for people to really get a sense of what's going on in terms of the experience of a survivor from abuse or assault. And you also really do address the partner's experience too. And so both of those things together in terms of fostering that teamwork approach that you mentioned, that really seems like that is the key in terms of how you get through it as a couple. Mm-hmm. So on that note, would you be willing to talk for a few minutes about some of the strategies in relearning touch? And, you know, the first one that comes to mind actually is the vacation.
Well, that's sort of the setup, Neil. That's it's a recommendation that's of like a break from sex. One partner said, vacation's going to the Caribbean. Stopping having sex, you know, with my partners, that's not a vacation, you know. It's like being in jail or something. But it's like, you know, it's a sort of thing, if what you're doing isn't working, stop doing it, you know. Just if having sex is creating experiences of being triggered and dissociated and a lack of intimacy and old patterns reinforced, then you've got to stop doing it, just like we do when we're breaking, you know, other habits and learning new skills. So it's a time where it doesn't mean you stop touch, because it's a time where you can then start with doing things like the relearning touch exercises. Now, the relearning touch exercises are a series of touch exercises that are, they're progressive. They develop skills, like I had said, for being able to relax, communicate, and be present in touch activity. And they can be done with clothes on, usually start out with clothes on. They can be done with clothes off. They can be done to, there are lots of variations. You create, you just use them as sort of like ideas that you then create your own kind of healing, touch healing program from. They teach the ability to speak up, to initiate touch, to associate touch with positive feelings like for having fun together and the playfulness, and also a sort of nurturing therapeutic touch. They allow you to create like a continuum of touch, and I talk about continuums of touch in the book, The Sexual Healing Journey. But you know, where you can just slowly, step by step, move towards more overt sexual activity. So you start with non-sexual, and then you can integrate some of these skills and exercises into being able to be sexual. Because so many times people, it's sort of like, oh, well, we have kissing and holding hands, and then there's sex. And it's sort of like, you know, it's like off the cliff, you know? And it's like, you know, oh my God. What this does is it just sort of says, let's create, have sex be part of a whole continuum of touch that feels safe within a survivor's control, where they're present, where they're sensual, and where they have these skills. And when you're sexual, it's just sort of like, oh yeah, I can do this with sex. Too many times survivors and partners think, oh well, if we can just, I think we can have sex now and it will work. But if they haven't developed these skills together and developed this, like I said earlier, a new file of experiences that they can, flash back on and with positive experiences, you know, and it's very hard to just like, you can't snap into it if you don't have those skills developed yet.
Right.
And you're just going to run into negative experiences. So taking a break from sex, and then that's where the partner needs to, you know, take care of him or herself in terms of their sexual drive and need for release. And when you just, you become this team in being able to develop these new skills. They are very well shown in the Relearning Touch video, because that's based on the exercises that are in the book. And you can see a free clip of that if you go to my website, healthysex.com. I think I was telling you, Neil, you scroll down on that first page, and it says for a free, you know, or to see a clip from Relearning Touch. And it will show the hand-to-heart exercise. It's a beautiful exercise of a couple being able to communicate positive feelings and appreciations for each other that emanate from the heart, move down the hand, out the palm, into the partner's heart, and then are sent back to you through the partner's circle of this flow of loving energy. And just having that in your toolkit or whatever. Oh yeah, I know what it's like to be touching each other and feeling love circulating, you know, back and forth from our bodies and our feelings. It's this like tremendous new skill there, you know. I mean, how can you, and then you can, you know, it can be done even with a variation where genitals are included in it. And it's like, wow, what a neat experience that a genital area can receive love and send love. It's like, whoa, it's like to a survivor that's like, what? Like, what are you talking about? You know? Mm. But then when you've done enough You have to go slowly and progressively through the less threatening exercises. That would be like a more advanced kind of thing. It can be done in a whole new way where it's a positive and healthy experience for both people.
Yeah, so those exercises really are meant to be done sequentially because you're building that, rebuilding that foundation of going from playful touch and safety and having control over contact and consent all the way up through actually like giving and receiving pleasure to each other.
Exactly. Yeah. And you'll know if you've gone too far. It's a little bit like, let's say you're crossing a creek or whatever, and it has a few stones in it. And if you hop, you might, you know, you might make it across, but you might fall in because there's so few stones. And what the relearning touch exercises does, it allows you to put in some bigger rocks there that you can step across with, you know, and you build a safe journey across, a little bridge to go across based on all these different experiences where you've gained new skills. It's really amazing. I hear, you know, I'm at the, towards the end, you know, of like treatment with people, you know, they're just saying like things like, I never thought sex could be this way. My whole idea of sex has changed. You know, I really see now that what happened to me was abuse. It wasn't, you know, healthy sexuality. And I've, you know, I just think differently when I think about sex. I think in terms of giggling now, or in terms of, you know, like being present sensually and feeling safe. It's just so different. That's what I like. Sex is infinite, you know. And if, you know, some of us were you know, we suffered the misfortune of being sexually messed with when we were younger. But that doesn't have to define us. It doesn't have to be the last word on sex. And in having experienced that, it's just like one of the negatives of our culture, of our society. But we do have that ability to, you know, to create sex to be whatever we want it to be, to reclaim it as something positive, and to learn the skills to make it so.
Well, your book, The Sexual Healing Journey, offers a truly inspiring approach to a couple being able to reclaim their sexuality for themselves. And I really appreciate your coming on today's show to discuss it, Wendy. Thank you so much.
Pleasure to be here, and I wish everyone well.
Would you mind just one last quick thing, which would be, there was one thing that made an impression on me. I mean, there were many in your book. The exercise of finding a home base, that seems like that would be so important in when a couple is working together at any step along the way. Can you just describe that before we leave for today?
Well, if you're a survivor and you have a partner, you think or maybe when you get a future partner, if there's a place on your partner's body that has positive associations to you, maybe it's the silkiness of your partner's hair in the back of their head, or maybe, I mean, for me, a wonderful home base was like the underside of my husband's forearm or upper arm is very soft, and it's the rest of him is hairy and muscular, you know, and all. But inside his underarm, like whenever I touched that, I just felt just like, so it was just so comforting, like, you know, to touch. And or, you know, your partner's eyes, or the shape of your partner's earlobe. What is some place? It could be your partner's heart, or your partner's hand. But if there's a place on your partner's body that when you that you can discover, and you might need to kind of hunt around a little to find it, where it can be like a home base where you feel present, you feel your full age that you are now, you feel in control of what's happening, you feel safe and comforted. And to touch that place, then when you are making love or exploring relearning touch exercises, and if you feel yourself start to get triggered, you can go to that place, you can shift and go to that place or that position that you're that you can nestle into with your partner's body. And that can help you to be able to be very comforting, so you can then later reapproach touch positively.
It also seems like a great way to communicate with your partner about what your experience is in that moment, what you need.
Yeah, you can take a break. You can do, there's a safe nest exercise where it's kind of an embrace, and you can listen to heartbeats, put your ear over your partner's heartbeat. We all have often some very, hopefully too, you know, some very positive associations of being in the womb where we felt safe and comforted and by the human energy enveloping, and you know, and listening to a partner's heartbeat can kind of bring us back abuse state where it was safe and be comforting. But you know, it's all about discovering what works for you and what fits, and what might work for one person might not for another. But knowing the concept that there can be a way of being held or holding your partner, or of touching your partner or being touched that generates more safety for you and feeling present, and to be aware of that, and then, you know, to capitalize on that in terms of creating experiences where you can do that to help you be able to approach sex in new ways.
Great. Well, thank you again so much, Wendy Maltz, for being on today's episode of Relationship Alive. And for the listeners at home, you can find out more about Wendy by visiting her website, healthysex.com. And you can, of course, get her books, The Sexual Healing Journey, among others, through Amazon.com or any other bookseller. And Wendy, thank you so much for being on today's show.
You're welcome. Take care.
And thank you for listening to another episode of Relationship Alive. If you like what you've heard and want to make it easier for other people to find out about us, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast and to rate and review us on iTunes. If you have questions or comments or want to continue the conversation, you can always join our Relationship Alive community Facebook group. And for more information about today's episode, visit us online at neilsatton.com/podcast, or you can always text the word passion, P-A-S-S-I-O-N, to the number 33444 for more information. Finally, do you have a burning question that you're hoping we can have answered here on Relationship Alive, either for a future or past guest? Let me know and I'll see what I can do. Take care and see you next time.